welcome to another episode of The Thing About Cars. I'm Mickey Desai. Around the table, we have a very full house today. Around the table, we have Dawn. Say hello, Dawn.
Hello, everyone.
And Misty.
Hiya.
And Dave.
I am objecting to saying hello. I will say guten tag.
And Ben.
Hey, hey.
How are you doing, Ben?
Oh, pretty well. How about you?
I'm good. Dave, you want to introduce our guest today?
Sure. If you have been listening recently, on February 14th, we recorded an episode with Mary Williams, who came on to talk about art cars and the role of art cars in culture and her own particular project. And during the course of that show, her sister Libby took it on the chin a couple of times. So we've invited Mary Williams and Libby Williams back so Libby can have equal time to talk about their worst cars and possibly just dish at each other for the amusement of the rest of us.
Don't forget car death.
Don't forget car death.
Car death. Okay. That sounds pretty serious. Welcome to the show, Libby, Mary.
Thank you.
Good to see you. Let's do a quick moment of Grand Trivia Auto before the hilarity begins. Our Grand Trivia Auto question for the day is, the caveman who figured out to make fire drastically changed the future of humanity. How did the 1963 Jeep Wagoneer drastically change the future of the SUV? Our answers, potential answers are A, the Wagoneer was the first four-wheel drive vehicle available with an automatic transmission. B, the Wagoneer was the first four-wheel drive vehicle sold to civilians at retail car dealerships. C, the Wagoneer was the first lifted station wagon based upon the AMC Rambler American 440. Or D, all of the above. Shall I read those choices again?
Sure. And this was the 63, right?
That is correct.
Oh, man,
Just for Libby and Mary, we will answer this question at the end of the program. But our choices again, the question again is, how did the 1963 Jeep Wagoneer drastically change the future of the SUV? In reverse order, the possible answers are D, all of the above, or all of the following, as the case may be. C, Wagoneer was the first lifted station wagon based upon the AMC Rambler American 440. B, Wagoneer was the first four-wheel drive vehicle sold to civilians at retail car dealerships. Or A, Wagoneer was the first four-wheel drive vehicle available with an automatic transmission. One or more of those is the correct answer. We'll answer that at the end of the show. First, I want to give our guests a very hard time.
The hazing begin.
Bring it up.
No, we cannot haze. We can gently rib people.
Excellent.
correct.
Libby, I understand you have a very curious addiction.
I do. I own it.
Oh, my goodness. You could see it in the background.
I was going to say, you could probably see it in the background. I love paint. I do. I can't help it.
That is not what I was thinking about. I've heard you have a very weird addiction to hats.
To hats?
Hats.
I have a lot of my mom's vintage hats. I should have put one on. I do like hats.
It's never too late.
It isn't. I have more paint than I have hats.
And she's also fond of a boa.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So is a boa like just a for special occasions or just whenever you feel like it?
Pretty much whenever I feel like it.
Yeah.
If the hats are going on, the boas are going on, mm-hmm. You know.
So this could be an everyday phenomenon. You might go shopping and just wear a hat and a boa.
Not generally in public.
Oh.
Although we did for mom's balloon launch. So yeah, I can't say not in public. Pretty much whenever we get the whim. It needs to be some sort of.
Along the burrito thing, you know, if every day is not a special occasion, you're not trying hard enough.
It's a good point.
All right. Let's. I have a note here from Dave that Mary has an update on painting your Nissan Frontier.
Well, yeah. So I claimed frugal Franny status about getting that Frontier painted and started the art project, and it was going horribly bad. It was beyond anything that I could stand to drive around. So then I realized that while I thought all Earl Scheib type car painting had gone away, I found a Mako in Doraville. So it has now gone and gotten a top coat and covered up the heinousness of what I started. And so now, having had this conversation with you guys, there's now a new plan. So there will be painting of the bed, but I also have found a source for art wraps and am about to decide finally what goes on the tailgate, on the hood, whether I'm going to have the whole thing wrapped, but it's going to all be your fault. As many things that I end up doing become. Usually it's Libby that gets blamed for these sorts of things. This one is not Libby's. She gets no blame for this one.
So if we're going to have the truck wrapped, can mm-hmm. we revisit the idea of having Edvard Munch's scream on the hood?
I think I'd like it across the back so that anybody behind you is getting screamed at.
I was thinking it'd be really interesting for somebody to see the scream come up in their rearview mirror.
I have committed to have the scream somewhere on it.
Excellent.
I'm not sure where yet, but once this thing is finally finished, I will post before and after pictures.
Yeah.
Of it all.
Excellent. I can't wait to see it. On a related note, my wife and I decided that if we ever get a minivan, we're going to have it festooned with images of wizards and dragons and unicorns and, you know, classic 70s fantasy epicness all over it.
Don't forget the Howling Wolf.
The Howling Wolf, exactly. We'll get Boris Vallejo out of retirement and get him to paint the entire thing. So,
but it does have to be in the airbrush style. It can't be, you know, like, right. I mean, if it's not airbrushed, that's right. You know.
Yes, that's right. Excellent.
That being said, I mm-hmm. want all of you to never come near my car. No.
Libby, I have another rumor about you that I think we should discuss, just maybe from an introduction to some kind of an intervention type place.
There's so many.
I've heard it told that in your last whole house, you covered the walls of your powder room with glitter and confetti.
I did.
How did that go?
It was fabulous. It was the potty room. Mm-hmm. I did. It was fun.
Glitter and confetti is a very interesting choice.
It's not glitter. It's foil confetti. It's the same thing I have on my boat.
Ah, wait.
They call me Sparkle Plenty.
So you did to your powder room the thing you did to your boat.
I did. Paint it white and throw foil confetti on it. It's very fun.
It's wet, so it does stick.
Yeah, so it sticks. Yeah,
it's a little bit like Mardi Gras by Sherwin Williams.
Yes, it is. There's a little more texture involved. Sherwin Williams couldn't get that texture.
Yeah,
and the reflective properties of foil confetti.
I'm starting to percolate some ideas now. But you also have to understand, my upstairs toilet is done totally in Coca-Cola.
Coca-Cola everything.
Yep. All of the wall decorations are Coca-Cola. I will never paint a red wall again in my life. I'm just going to put that out there.
That's wise.
When you said everything was done in Coca-Cola, I was wondering if you did the trick of cleaning your toilet bowl with Coca-Cola.
I'm not going to waste good Coke like that.
Have you heard this, though? People do that?
It's crap, too. It's crap. Is it?
Okay.
I have used it to clean the battery terminals on a Corvette.
Why am I not surprised?
100% not surprised.
And I've used it to dissolve rust off of stainless steel.
Wow.
I've used it to cook a ham.
See, for something like that, if you're not actually going to drink it, though, I think it's more sporting to, you know, or save the money and buy like Big K cola.
That's right. So you took away number three from me, Libby. So you have a glitter encrusted pontoon boat. Where should I keep an eye out for this somewhere? I guess you have no trouble being visible on the water.
No. Yeah. It's a private lake. Yeah. So people can't see us
much. Cool. Much. Except all the neighbors.
Yeah. who call me Sparkle Plenty. They called me Sparkle Plenty before they even knew my name.
That's hilarious.
He's the one with the boat that sparkles.
That's too funny.
And the Lavender Beach House.
Yes.
Yeah, and my house is lavender with purple doors.
So why is paint your addiction? Why? What's up with that? Why is it like a constant quest for change or what?
It's better than alcohol.
the mist tints, the oops paints at Sherwin-Williams and Home Depot and all of them, it just makes me so happy to get a new color. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. I just have to have it. They're fabulous. 50 cents, a little jar of 50 cent happiness. I finally stopped the gallons. I ran out of room. I was like, and I'm never going to use them, but it hurts my heart when there's a really good color there. And
are you an artist by trade? Are you an artist?
No, okay. Not by a long shot. I like to throw paint around. Throwing paint around is real fun. Artistry. Now I do Rob from Jackson Pollock, Damien Hirst, you know, when I can just flat out copy something that's a real artist has done, I'm in.
It's called an homage.
I see.
An homage.
Yes.
Have you thrown paint in any of your cars?
No.
Not on purpose.
Yeah. There has been some overspray. There has been one or two trips to the auto zone for the Camry white. I have a tendency to run into things.
That's too funny.
A little bit.
Well, I mean, what are you driving? A Camry?
Yes.
Why?
And it's a 2011. It's like almost brand new. Well, now I've run it into so many things. I couldn't sell it if I wanted to. And I haven't driven it because I've worked from home so much. It doesn't even have 100,000 miles on it yet. It's only got like 85 or something. So it's going to be with me forever and ever. I mean, okay. I drove convertibles for years and years and loved them. And when I went to get this car, I thought I was going to have to commute a long way from where I lived to where my job was, but I moved to the Purple House on the lake instead. So I have the little hybrid that I thought I was going to be commuting in on the interstate. Convertibles on the interstate are just not fun. So that's why I got the car. And now it is going to be a part of me for probably the rest of my natural days.
So you shot for just pure reliability and nothing in the way of enjoyment.
And yeah, exactly. Exactly. They had messed up all my convertibles. All of them were crap. All the ones I could afford or that didn't come with a mechanic. You know, Beamers are great if you have your own personal mechanic. But you know, I am not a car person. We're quite handy with power tools, but when it comes to the car, you take it to somebody and drop it off and say, fix it.
Right. Right. So
Libby, you seem like a lovely person and one I would love to have in my life, but I've got three exceptions to some of the things you've said.
Okay.
First of all, you make pretty things. You're an artist. End of discussion.
She is an artist.
Secondly, convertibles on the freeway are amazing. and third, my current convertible is a lovely, dependable thing. And so, you know, you just have to find the right convertible.
Correct. So, correct.
So, which one is it?
I loved all my convertibles. Loved them. But
my current baby, Claudette, is a 2016 European version Mazda Miata.
Nice.
Soul red, nice. Bose sound system.
No room for shopping bags, though. You got to have a back seat for the shopping bags.
Much less paint cans.
It holds like two crates of beer in the trunk.
The important parts.
But, so that would be probably about 5 to 6 gallons of paint.
Don't encourage her.
That would. No. I was going to say that would. There's a possibility.
So Libby, let me ask you some questions then related to the whole, what were the cars you used to drive that were convertibles that you liked? And pursuant to that, what do you think makes for a good convertible that you're not seeing on the market today?
Okay. I loved my Celica convertibles. I had two of them. They were fabulous. Loved them. They quit making them. And then I had a
Large Marge.
Chevrolet.
Large Marge.
Large Marge, the Interstate Barge, was Sebring. But before Large Marge...
You had that Capri that Daddy talked you into.
Yeah. When we start talking about the worst cars ever, yes, the Mercury Capri was the worst car ever.
Except for the woods. We're going to, all right. Exactly.
Next to the Austin Marina. But my black one, what was it, Mary? Mom had the LeBaron and I had the Chevrolet. The Cavalier is here.
The Cavalier. Yeah. Yeah. The
Cavalier. My black Cavalier. Loved them all. They were great. And what makes a good one? Must have a electric top so you can put it down at a light or up when it rains. Must have a window big enough in the back that you can actually see. The blind spots, that was one of the things that really turned me off of all the ones I was driving, like the Solara and all that. They have this tiny, tiny little, I'm like, I can't see anything. Never before I got this car did I run into things, but now I tend to just run my car into stuff all the time.
So yeah, that could be subconscious.
So to be fair to her, I'm not aware she's ever run into another automobile. They tend to be sides of buildings or fences or trees.
Yeah, or posts. But yeah, posts, I've hit a couple cars.
Immobile objects.
Yeah.
Yes.
Stuff immobile, that doesn't move.
Things that don't move. Right.
So so how is it that you're more of a danger to stationary objects than to other moving objects? That's kind of
I know. It doesn't make any sense, does it?
No, it doesn't.
I think I'm easily distracted.
Right.
It looks shiny.
Right.
Squirrel.
So electric tops and rear windscreen in the tops are in current convertible models, but you don't like any of the currents?
Well, I haven't shot for one since I got Cam Newton. Cam Newton. I'm just like, it's there. Cause I mean, I wrecked it like right after I got it. And so I was like, well, we'll be having this one for a while.
Okay.
And you know, if you're not going to have fun in a car, if it's not going to be like the greatest car in the world, it's just basic transportation and who cares?
Right.
It's
okay.
And impact tool.
Right. So let's, you want to go grab a hat and a boa and answer four quick questions for us.
I will grab a hat and a boa in a heartbeat.
Really?
Stamp. Sure.
I think there's one right behind you.
Oh my God. Look at this.
I'm in love. That's it. That's it.
You know, this is kind of appropriate. Derby weekend's next weekend.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Libby, we're,
you can't see you at all.
I'm like, you look like Sia.
Libby, will you be my Aunt Libby? I don't
sure.
have any, I don't have any living aunts that I particularly care for. So,
you know, this is appropriate because something occurs to me, and it's a story from my own history, with the passion that Misty has for Colette versus Libby's utilitarian approach to the car. I had a great, great aunt, Winifred, who died years before I was born. And she had a 1932 Duesenberg. And allegedly, when she died, they put her in the back seat of the Duesenberg and walled her up in a mausoleum. Huh. And I thought, you know, this is how I want to go. Cruising through the pearly gates in my Duesenberg. and actually, you must, I'm actually kind of picturing you maybe that you're going to be interred in the Miata.
Yeah. You know, kind of, you know, like, and if I'm giving spoilers, it's your own fault because it's been out for a while. Kind of like the Dean Winchester ending in Supernatural. And like, none of y'all have seen that. Okay, whatever. He dies. He goes to heaven. First thing he does, gets in the car and like just drives the car all around heaven. And I'm like, you know, that was the ending that he deserved.
Yes.
You know,
good for him. Know. Having never seen the show. Yeah. Good for him.
Yeah.
Mickey.
So, all right. You ready, Libby?
Sure.
Properly festooned in hat and boa. This is fantastic. Four quick questions.
Okay.
What number one, what is your dream car?
I got to go with the Alfa Romeo Spider.
Yeah.
That's good.
Nice.
Why the Alpha? Why the Spider?
My friend had one in college and I was very jealous of it. Not always wanted it.
Classic car, but timeless, iconic car.
Beautiful.
Question number two. Where is your next road trip going to be?
Road trip in a car? Costco. I fly. If it's more than, you know, 3 or 4 hours, I'm on a plane.
So you never just hop in the car to do a quick vacation, maybe a day trip somewhere?
We're airline people, Mickey.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
I'll
go see my friend Tony up in the mountains. How about that?
That's nice. Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. Question number three for you, Libby. What's the most fascinating thing you've seen on the road or in someone's house or garage?
Ooh, I should have been prepared for this one. My friend Jeff Hull does cars. He did the ambulance from the Ghostbusters, and he did the Blues Brothers car. And
Andy's cruiser.
Yeah, he's working on the family.
Family truckster.
The family truckster, yeah. So they've always entertained me.
So wait, he's not an original movie props person. He's he does recreations?
Yes, yes. He finds the cars and spends an enormous amount of time finding the right potato chip bag to put on the dashboard, and you know, everything has to be absolutely perfect.
Movie
he takes it to Dragon Con and rides in the parade.
Yeah.
What he does with the Blues Brothers car. The other ones are still under construction.
Because I would do things for a good Ghostbusters Ecto-mobile. That would be, yeah.
Yeah, he had that one and then he sold it. Oh, so,
man,
to further his obsession with cinema cars.
Can't blame him. All right, last question. It's always something silly. Something completely random. I don't know if we should use that question or not. More editing. I might ask too. We may edit one of these out. What's your favorite / most useful kitchen gadget?
Glitter gun.
Or confetti cannon.
Confetti cannon.
If I had one, but honestly, it's probably my mandolin. I love my mandolin, even though it bit me. I still love my mandolin. It's fun to play with.
They do make chainmail gloves for those things.
You need one because
yeah.
It was quite the injury before I figured out how to use it. But right. It does everything.
Yeah,
it zests, it slices.
Yeah, Libby's chainmail gloves would be opera length in light purple with three rings on each hand.
I don't know why I don't have them. Actually,
I'm not seeing a problem with that.
Thanks for the birthday idea, guys.
Yeah. Okay, so here's the part we might edit in as a substitute question. Libby, you're hosting a dinner party and can invite one famous person, living or dead. Who would you invite?
You're always supposed to say Jesus, and that would be pretty fascinating. But in reality, it would probably be Mick Jagger.
Mick Jagger. That's cool. Why?
What would you serve?
Yeah.
No kidding. What would you serve Mick Jagger? Clearly he doesn't eat, so I don't think it would matter.
Yeah, it'd be vodka and amphetamines.
Exactly.
Vodka with an amphetamine spoon, you know.
Yeah.
There's an X-rated joke in here that I can't go anywhere near. Are you a Stones fan? Are you like a huge Stones fan?
I am. I may be a bigger Jimmy Buffett fan, but Jimmy Buffett seems a little bit more accessible than Mick Jagger. Yeah. I mean, I doubt I'll ever get to meet Jimmy Buffett, but if somebody was like, you can meet anybody. Mick Jagger would be the most remote.
I met Jimmy Buffett very, very briefly.
Did you?
Yeah. I was doing security for one of the shows, and it was, I frequently tell people that of all the security I've ever done for any show in the Atlanta area. And I hit like in the mid 90s, I was pit security for almost every single rock venue in the city. And the worst, most hazardous show I ever had to work was not a Rob Zombie show. It was not Lynyrd Skynyrd at the Fox, although that came close. It was not even Lollapalooza, although I have some horror stories to tell about Lollapalooza. The worst one was a Jimmy Buffett show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
This is too much tequila.
Too much tequila, too many people advocating responsibility. And
exactly.
That was the way it was. But not to throw too much shade on our parrot head fans or anything like that, but y'all gonna need to calm down and maybe find religion or something, because it was.
Having been to about 45 shows, I understand where you're coming from.
But the parking lot's always amazing.
Oh my God, the parking lot was a complete and total mess afterwards. The
parking lot was Sodom and Gomorrah.
That's right. You took the words right out of my mouth, Dave. That's exactly what I was going to say.
Not to like.
Too funny. Well, Libby, thank you for being our guest today. Please stick around with us and have fun with the rest of our content, the rest of our stuff. I know we've got a segment coming up here. Misty gets to have a quick moment doing the relationship roadster today. Take it away, Misty.
Sure. In the 1917 in Georgia, Claude Dotson was born to Charlie Brown Dotson and Kate Lee Smith Dotson. He served in World War II, was a corporal in World War II, and a motor pool mechanic on Tinian Island, which, if you're not familiar with that, is where the Enola Gay was deployed from. Fast forward, in 1952, his youngest daughter, Katie Sue, was born. And on a Monday in April in 1973, her daughter was born. That would be me. My grandpa was an auto mechanic in his blood. And the one car I remember from my grandpa always was I have no idea what year it was. It was a Opel Kadett in orange and matte black. And my grandfather worked on that car for years and years and years and years. And my grandfather had a stroke, and this was in the, you know, in the 80s, and he lost the ability to drive. And at the end, that's pretty much what hastened his demise in 1987. But my mother decided to give him a treat one day. He was going down to the VA, and he still had a speech impediment from his stroke. And she said, you know, well, Daddy, let's take you down to the VA to pick up your new hearing aid. Now, this was the 80s, so this was the old-fashioned hearing aid, you know, the wire down to the box. And driving back, my grandfather starts fiddling, and he's tapping the thing in his ear, and he's twisting the knob on the thing, and he looked around, and Mama says, you know, she says, Daddy, what's wrong? And my grandpa looked at her and looked at the car, and he says, God damn it, I thought I got this damn auto quiet. But he'd worked for years on this car. And that car sat in our yard for years, because when my grandpa passed away, he didn't pass that car to his son, who was an auto mechanic. He didn't even give it to his daughter. He gave it to me.
Wow.
Yeah. And unfortunately, my mother sold it before I was able to drive. Oh. But I still remember sitting in that car thinking about my grandpa, sitting in those bucket seats and driving, you know, just envisioning these trips in my head. And I remember my grandpa worked at this little Shell station up in Demorest, Georgia, on the corner of 441. Scotty's Shell station. It was a little one-bay garage. And I remember sitting there and jumping on the hose to make the bell go ding and smelling the garage. And to this day, every time I walk into a garage, the first thing I do is take that big, deep breath. And I remember my grandpa always wearing his watch with the face on the inside of his wrist so he wouldn't bang it, and shaking it and hearing that shake. And my grandpa was a little man. He was 5'4", maybe, you know, and about 124 pounds, soaking wet. And he wore the twill pants and the black shoes and the button-up shirts. And he could work on a car all day long and never get a spot of oil on him. One of the best stories that was ever told, because my grandfather was also a musician. He had perfect pitch. And there was an old 57 Ford, turquoise and white, with the wings on the back and the big bench seat that went for miles and miles and miles. And someone brought it into the garage. And the owner of the garage, Scotty, thought it had thrown a rod. And he said, I'm not going to buy this. My grandpa listened to it, and he listened hard. He says, I give you $250 for it. Just turned out one of the pistons was out of line. And Scotty cussed my grandpa till the day my grandpa stopped walking. He says, you stole that car from me. Grandpa said, no, I didn't. I just listened a little better than you did. And my mama drove that car for forever. So all my life, I've grew up with cars. And all my life, I've loved Opals. And I still swear that one day I'm going to get that Opel Manta that looked like that little miniature Corvette, because that was the one car that my papa never had. But that's also the reason Claudette is named Claudette, after my papa, Claude Lee Red Dotson.
Ah, that's fantastic. That's awesome.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good story, Misty.
If your grandfather was stationed on Tinian, so was my father.
Interesting. There's another interesting story about that, because my grandpa, he was an efficient man. Now, my grandma called him lazy, but then I still don't know how they managed to have three kids. They didn't like each other that much. He was stationed on Tenney Island. He was a corporal. He earned a Bronze Star, and we don't know why or how, but he got really tired of washing his uniforms by hand. So he gathered up all these Japanese airplane parts, and he built himself a washing machine, which is really interesting when you consider that Japanese washing machine factories were converted to build airplanes.
Oh, yeah.
That is actually a common story, because my father did the same thing. He built it out of an oil drum, and it was wind-powered.
I would probably bet money that your dad and my papa all knew each other, and they might have even collaborated on that washing machine.
It's entirely possible. That is too awesome.
That is pretty funny. Thank you, Misty. Excellent stuff. We need to find you an Opal. What was it? An Opal?
Cadet.
No, it's not an Opal Cadet. It's an Opal Manta. It actually looks like a miniature Corvette.
That is not the Manta. That's the GT.
Oh. Okay, yeah, the GT. Well, no, I'm sorry. In Europe, it's called a Manta.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, see, there was a different car called that over here that still has really nice styling, but doesn't look like a Corvette. But I have some friends here who have a Opel GT, a former show car that has the most fabulous metallic purple paint job on it, and chrome wheels. The former owner did all kinds of neat trick stuff on it. It's just the coolest car.
It is, you know, and I never understood why my grandpa, who was born, you know, and died in Northeast Georgia, he's actually buried in Tiger Cemetery, which is right in front of the airfield that the founders of Fieldale used to use to run their boot to Atlanta, because they used airplanes, not cars. They were really smart. I never understood where he got this love for Opals, you know. But my grandpa was also the kind of man, he never bought like a brand new riding lawnmower. He'd go to the junkyard, spend like $5, and it looked like, you know, like it was going to fall apart, but it ran so perfectly. You know, and so that's, but he was part of the reason that I was not allowed to get my driver's license until I could change the oil and do a basic tune-up on my 1978 four-door, right, five-speed Toyota Corolla.
Right. Too funny. You know, I like the story. There's something you said, one phrase in your story sticks out to me, just because I'm always on the lookout for ways to turn the thing about cars into some sort of syndicated TV show, and is maybe the show should be called One Bay Garage. Or maybe that's a spinoff. One Bay Garage.
Where we just talk about one particular car.
You know, and add some Southern charm to it. You know, you get back to the old school Southern charm of being able to sit out front in front of your garage with a pitcher of lemonade or something harder. And yeah, it would just thoroughly dissect one car. And actually,
if you're going to sit out in front of your garage, it needs to be with a Moon Pie and an RC Cola. If you're going to do it right.
Honest to God, I cannot imagine what this show would be like if we actually recorded it drinking.
Oh, my.
We should do that one day and just release that as like a private episode. You don't get to see it unless you pony up some funds or something. But I nominate Libby and Mary to make the cocktails.
I'm in.
Works for me.
Excellent. And Libby's like, yes, she's nodding throughout the entire thing. And the viewers can't see it, but that hat is just like, I feel like we would catch a breeze coming off of it, because yes, that is just so awesome.
It's about the size of a patio umbrella with fringe.
And it's a lovely purple color. Yeah. Purple works well. Yeah.
I mean, I'm there for it. I'm waiting to hit the big 5-0 so I can wear that hat too.
There you go.
You don't have to wait, Misty. It's never too early.
I've actually had this hat for about 30 years.
See?
It's never too early to have the midlife crisis you've always dreamed of.
That's why I drive a sports car.
Dawn, are you still with us?
I am here. I'm listening intently.
Excellent. You want to take us through a decade?
I would love to take us through a decade.
Excellent. Dawn drives the decades. Go for it.
Yeah. I'm going back to the 60s. And part of that is because my movies seem to pull some cars from that era. And we just talked about our question for this episode is about the Wagoneer. So I was looking through Car and Driver the other day, and it seems that last summer, June of 2020, they had a edition that talked about their GOATs, or greatest cars of all time, is what they called GOATs. And I noticed that I thought it was really fun because the 60s, you know, looking at the greatest cars of all time, you know, there are a lot of great ones. And one of the ones that, of course, you know, always jumps out, I don't know why they always have to pull Jaguars. Everybody always oohs and ahs over the XEs, XKs, what have you. But the car that I thought was really fun that they mentioned was the 1963 Corvette Stingray. And, you know, everything about that car is just, like you said, Ben, it is so pretty. My parents had a 62 Corvette, and I was born in 66. And Dad always lamented he wished he could have waited one more year. But the 63s were actually almost twice the price of the 62s. I mean, they were expensive. Yeah. They had an incredible V8 in them, super sophisticated suspension. That body shape was just stunning. And I, you know, think about that compared to the 64 Pontiac GTO, you know, two different cars, but both great vehicles that you kind of, you know, iconic from the 60s, and the GTO being, of course, probably in a lot of movies that, you know, were around in the times in the 60s. And then, you know, to round that out was the Ford Mustang from 65. Mm-hmm. So, I thought the funny and interesting thing about that Mustang was the base price was $2,400, which was so accessible. Again, a V8 and rear wheel drive, say that four times fast. Just those cars from that time period, especially in America, were amazing. We, you know, you still had... in that 60s range, the Lamborghini Miura from 66, which was, you know, Car and Driver has a nice little write-up on it. It was, I was surprised, and Ben, you'll find this interesting. It was a V12?
Yeah, it was.
345 horsepower?
Yep. Transverse mounted and right behind your ears.
Man, that thing they said could chomp down at 174 miles an hour.
Yeah, I really... I recommend looking up the if anybody's familiar with the Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee films. There's one with a Miura, and they really drive home. Sorry about the choice of words there. The point that the engine really does sit, you know, right behind the passenger compartment, and you can really hear it sucking air when you throttle it, and it's great.
Yeah, and there were only 763 made of those. So if you find one, grab it and let me know. it's a beautiful, beautiful car. But I was really excited that really the three of these that Car and Driver were calling GOATs, you know, greatest cars of all time, were American in terms of that Pontiac GTO and the Mustang and of course that beautiful Corvette, which you could only get in Honduras red, I think. I mean, I do think they painted other ones, but you know, it just shined in that bright red color. Really, really pretty car. So I don't, you know, that's kind of the 60s. I just miss walking down memory lane. I'm glad to have been born in the 60s and think about that car, those cars of that time, which will eventually, when you're ready, bring us back to the Wagoneer of 63, I think you said.
Yes, absolutely. 63. And we will answer that question in just a hot minute. I wanted to ask though, is the 60s the pinnacle of automotive style for you, Dawn?
I think it is. I think it is the pinnacle. Just so much was happening. So many things, but design-wise, safety features were not quite come in yet, so that the cars had some leeway with their bumpers and the way that things looked around the car. They were just very sleek and sophisticated. You know, I think that was when cars started to get really sophisticated. They were, and under the hood, just lots going on there that, again, not that we shouldn't have certain requirements by our transportation agencies to make sure the cars are safe, but there was just a lot of innovation happening in the 60s with little restrictions on what could be done until we get to the 70s. So I think there was just a lot of freedom in the car design and the mechanics of it, and just a lot of clever engineering that was happening. So I love this Car and Driver series. It actually takes you through, starts in the 50s, and they had it all the way up till now that they ran last summer. So anybody have a chance to take a look at that?
It was also in a lot of ways kind of an interesting period because, car design, this is where World War II comes back into the story. Things got held up by that war quite a bit. I wonder, because the 46s and 47s and even up to 49 in a lot of cases were, warmed over pre-war designs just because, the industrial interruption that happened. And I wonder without that war, what would automotive development have been like? What would they look like by the 50s? But, you get to the 60s, you're 20 years post-war. And so not only have things caught up a little bit, but, there's all this kind of pent-up energy that's being released. You've had a whole generation of kind of experimentation and edge pushing. you're past the wretched excess of the late 50s. So it was a really, really cool time. And my grandfather bought a brand new 66 Corvette. He lived in a small town in Ohio, about an hour and a half south of Cleveland. He was the chief of the captain of the local fire station. And, he was always a car guy. He had also bought a 55 Chevy brand new, which he installed an alternator in, the first alternator in his town. That was kind of that was seen as cutting edge technology at the time.
Oh, yeah.
Magnetometer
or whatever it was called.
Generator. Yeah.
Yeah.
Generator or dynamo.
Right. Dynamo.
The alternator produced alternating current that was rectified to direct current and at a higher amperage, and it would do so at a lower RPM than the generator would, which just made directly, DC. For electrical systems, it was a real, it was like sticking a jet engine in there almost. But he bought the brand new 66 Vette in silver with a black interior, and he loved it. And by the 70s, he was doing some club racing with it. He was a member of the Mid-Ohio Corvette Club. Took it to the races at the Mid-Ohio track every year and several times a year, I believe. And everything he did to it to race was all bolt-on, completely reversible. This was amateur club racing, so, nothing too crazy. He did have a nice, nice set of racing wheels, though, that he paid something like $2,000 for back in the early 70s. My half-uncle, who still lives in the old house up there, has the car now, and it's been completely returned. It's been completely returned to stock. I last saw it in 2005. All original, nothing's been restored. It just looks like an all original Corvette that's, got a few miles on it, but is in pretty good shape. It's been, other than the racing, it's been treated pretty gently most of its life. And at the time, what my uncle said was he'd take it to the occasional cruise in at the Sonic or whatever. A little Sunday driving, nothing, too crazy again. And he said someday he will pass it down to his son. And he said, but for now, I don't want to know what it's worth because that'll stress me out.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Yeah. But I agree with you. I think the utilitarian time of the 50s and the 40s gave way to the 60s. And everything that was happening was just incredible time for cars.
I think
these were amazing. So it is my favorite time of, I grew up in that 62 Corvette. My parents, my dad was stationed in DC and my family was from Pittsburgh. So, on the weekends, they threw me in somewhere, probably, right behind the gear shift and just, went off, no putting the baby in the back seat. There was just, I was a little thing and, we were winning, dad put the top down and we went off to Pittsburgh.
I think I only rode in my grandpa's Vette maybe a couple of times when I was about five or six.
Oh, I grew up in that car and I'm, I'm sad. My dad is often laments. I wish I could find it and get it back for him or one like it. It would be really special.
My grandmother had a early 70s Chevy Vega, which I think I spent more time in. Because I remember every day she and I would hop in the little Vega. And when I was visiting anyway, every day during my visits, she and I would hop in the little Vega and take Grandpa his lunch up at the fire station.
Ben.
Huh?
I have a personal challenge for you.
Uh-oh. Bring it.
Pick a relative, or pick all of your relatives, each of your relatives,
yeah,
and write down a car story for each one.
Yeah, I think I could do that. Well, most of them anyway. Some were not very
automotive. Multiple car stories too. And these will have to become our relationship roadsters. And we'll start with family relationships and then move on to like girlfriends and boyfriends
that would be fun.
Some other stuff. But I think that's the material we need to be, you know, a little behind the scenes work should
I'll up the challenge because I consider Libby and Mary part of my family. You know, yeah. Bring relatives on.
Yeah.
Although I think Ben and I are just going to have to admit that we will never be as cool and awesome as our grandparents or like my grandfather and his grandparents because my grandma didn't drive.
Oh, yeah.
No. I think you both are pretty cool. I mean, that's
although my Grammy on my dad's side had like in the late 80s had like a Thunderbird, but it was like a new model. But still, she was in like her 70s. So
I was at some point, I'll share my grandmother's story of cars and her love of cars, which is where I think I got my love of cars from.
So
and she had a 1920s T-top Ford in the best color, black.
So we are way, way over time at this point, but I wanted to very quickly ask Libby, our guest for today, if there was a car from a past relationship that stands out to her in her memory.
My grandmother in the Galaxy 500 that she would, she called it midnight rides. And she was in Mississippi, rural Mississippi. And she'd take us up and down these gravel roads, mountainous kind of gravel roads, and sling us back and forth across the back of the back seat as fast as she could go in her Galaxy 500. One-eyed grandma driving like a bat with all three of us in the back just screaming at the top of our lungs. That's hilarious. Fabulous.
That is great. I mean, you know, we're all sitting here talking about family members and actual relatives, and I'm surprised that none of us are readily recalling a car from an actual significant relationship, you know, significant other or anything like that. And
I have some too. Yeah.
I've got some.
Maybe that's the R-rated behind the scenes.
Well, I've got
we're going to save that one for the thing about cars uncorked.
That's it. Let's end the episode today. We're going to skip viewer mail this time just because we are so out of time. And but please don't let that stop the audience for sending us your car questions or your ideas for a car cocktail, because I know we're working on the possibility of developing a cocktail or two in the name of the thing about cars, one of which Ben's wife very wisely says we should call it Wait Till You Get Home. the drive home first cocktail. We really appreciate input from our listener audience. So please do send us our questions, even though we're not going to get to them today. Let's end the episode, but with the answer to our grand trivia auto question. You guys ready?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So the question was, let me get my reading glasses back on. The caveman who figured out how to make fire drastically changed the future of humanity. How did the 1963 Jeep Wagoneer drastically change the future of the SUV? Was the Wagoneer the first four-wheel drive vehicle available with an automatic transmission? Was the Wagoneer the first four-wheel drive vehicle sold to civilians at retail car dealerships? Was the Wagoneer the first lifted station wagon based on the AMC Rambler American 440? Or all of the above? Let's let our guest go first. Libby, you want to take a stab at this one?
Sure, I'll say D.
D, all of the above?
All of the above.
And Mary, since you're also our guest today, would you like to take a stab at this?
I don't think it's all of them. I'm not sure which one it's not, but I don't think it's all of them.
Okay.
Pick one.
Pick one. Yeah, you want to pick one?
I don't think it was off the AMC, so I'll go with first one sold in a regular car dealership.
The first four-wheel drive vehicle sold to civilians at a retail dealership. Got it. Dawn?
We had one. And I was just texting with my parents and can't figure out what year yet. It was a 63 or 64. We had it in the early 70s. And I'm saying all of the above. I remember that thing like nobody's business, sitting in the back with, just with all my cousins, with the wheels, with the back window rolled down and tooling around the countryside, going from one place to another. That thing was the bomb. So I'm saying all the above.
Okay. Misty?
I'm with Don on this one. All of the above.
Dave?
I think it's the first four-wheel drive with automatic transmission.
So that would be the first choice A. And lastly, Ben, you got a shot?
Yeah, I'm with Dave on this one. I'm going with the automatic transmission.
And I need to verify, because I believe that this question is from our trivia czar, Tim Rogers. So if it is, thank you, Tim. And if it's not, well, thank you, Tim, anyway. But the answer is A. Wagoneer was the first four-wheel drive vehicle available with an automatic transmission. Well done, Ben. Well done, Dave.
Although it looks like a
lifted station wagon.
It looks like a station wagon, and it's really high up, and there's lots of gaps between the wheel and the wheel well. So it's got the rack on top. It looks just like a station wagon, and it rode like a station wagon.
It's funny how things keep coming back to, you know, original styles, because a lot of the crossovers these days are simply lifted station wagons if you look at them.
And I guess what they meant in terms of sold in retail was the regular Jeep before the 60s was probably sold in, if they're just going back that. But there was no other style in Jeep besides a regular, you know, Jeep. The Wagoneer was the first of you know, what we, the precursor to the SUV, you could say.
Yeah.
Right. It was the first. Yeah, that's right. So thank you, Libby. Thank you, Mary. Thank you, Libby, for putting on the hat and the boa for us. That really made my day. That's awesome. It looks like it made Misty's day as well.
I'm happy.
And thanks to everyone else for helping us make this episode a good one. We really appreciate your reviews on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or wherever it is you find the show. In the meantime, I encourage everyone who's listening to go get vaccinated and go wear a nice flamboyant hat and a boa when you do go get vaccinated. And and be safe out there. We'll see you with another episode in about a week. Take care, everybody.
See ya.
Bye. Thanks for having us.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.